Welcome to the Drop Time Report. Turn up the volume and listen to amazing stories about big bucks and the hunters who harvested them. Here is your host, outdoor writer, Tracy Breen.
Welcome to the Drop Time Report. On this week's episode, we're going to have on Joe Weimer. Joe is from Missouri, and this past season was able to tag a buck that scored over 197 inches gross. The most amazing thing about this story is the fact that over the course of 2 years, while he was chasing this buck, he only had a couple pictures of it and only had a couple close encounters with it and just stuck with it, and was hoping that if he hung enough stands in the quarry area where the buck, where he thought the buck was living, that eventually he would tag the buck. And he was able to do that. It truly is a story of persistence. Before we get Joe on the phone, I'd like to thank my sponsors, my title sponsor, Redneck Blinds, as we're getting close to turkey season. Check out their soft-sided blinds, their ghillie blind, and their other soft-sided blinds. They're great for turkey hunting. Fourth Arrow Camera Arms. If you're going to be filming your turkey hunt this spring, check out Fourth Arrow Camera Arms. They have a camera arm accessory called a Rex Arm that makes rotating your camera on a tripod and getting different angles as a gobbler's approaching the blind a lot easier than just having a camera stationary on a tripod. So check out Fourth Arrow Camera Arms. Windscent, makers of Vapor Deer Scent Technology. Morel Targets, makers of the High Roller Target. Huntworth Gear, if you're on a budget, if you don't want to spend a bunch of money on hunting clothes, check out huntworthgear.com. Pine Ridge Archery, makers of the Nitro Vane. Of course, my favorite mineral, Lucky Buck Mineral. Spring is coming. That is the best time of year to put mineral on the ground. Grim Reaper Broadheads, check out their Pro Series Broadheads. Schaefer Performance Archery, they make the XV Arrow Rest, a rest that actually slides away instead of dropping away. And it's been designed to handle arrow speeds exceeding 400 feet per second. Illinois Connection Outfitters, the Outdoorsman's, makers of great tripods and glassing systems for hunting in the backcountry, as well as backpacks and other accessories. Last but not least, Wilderness Athlete. If you're trying to shed a few pounds, if you just want to drink a more healthy drink than all the other energy drinks out there, or Mountain Dew, or whatever it is you're using to get up in the morning, check out Wilderness Athlete Nutritional Products. My favorite drink is the Hydrate and Recover. Enter Drop 10 at checkout and get a discount. Now let's go ahead and get Joe on the phone. Welcome to the Drop 10 Report, Joe. How are you today?
Doing good. How are you?
Pretty good. Congratulations on killing a monster.
Man, I appreciate it. It doesn't seem real, that's for sure. It just doesn't seem possible, but here we are, and I appreciate it.
Now, before this buck, what was the biggest buck you've killed?
I have killed a few bucks in the 160 gross range. I killed one 2 years ago that grossed a little over 165 as he was, but as I was hunting him, he'd broken his rack a couple days before, and I got it rebuilt, and it was around, you know, in that 185 range. So, with what he was. So, you know, a couple in that 160, 170 inch range. I've got a few, lucky to have a few in that range.
Cool. But this one, yeah, Obviously breaks the mold at 197.
This one definitely has a place on the wall. We'll put it to you that way. It's definitely going to find a spot.
That's awesome. Now let's talk about the buck. Kind of an interesting story. We always hear about a buck being taken on a big piece of property, or, you know, a big family farm and those kind of things. And you do hunt a larger family farm, but you had to kind of change your tactics and your tricks to figure out where this buck was. So let's kind of go back. You first started chasing him last year, correct?
That's right.
And how big was he last year?
You know, based on what I saw last year, I knew the deer was a really good deer that I was going to be very excited to kill with my bow. I had one encounter with him on our family farm, and kind of to that point, you know, I do a lot of my hunting. I'm fortunate to my in-laws have a very nice farm, and one of my favorite farms, my favorite farm to hunt, and where I spend the majority of my time in all the different seasons, is a place here in central Missouri that is a cool farm, but it's a working farm. It's row crop, it's cattle. The farmers, my family, they're not making a bunch of exceptions for hunting. They're not gonna veer off their plan, and they shouldn't, because it's their livelihood. But even though it is a family farm, there's a lot of there's plenty of obstacles that might not be the way I would set it up if I was just doing it to hunt. So yeah, I hunt that farm, and I had the encounter with the deer on that farm last year. I had the encounter with the deer, and it's a spot during the rut. I see the deer. It's gone and kind of comes and goes. And late bow season, I'd kind of given up on this deer. Didn't have any other photos of him. And I was out doing just some late season scouting. And I happen upon this deer in a field that I've got permission to hunt. And so I make a plan. I'm going to wait for the wind. I watch him a couple nights as they get on those late season patterns. It's pretty predictable. And I knew if nothing bothered him, there's a good chance that I would at least have an opportunity at the deer. And as luck and blessings would have it, my wife, who was pregnant, actually had my daughter, Mary Lane, on the day that I was planning to kill this deer, or in my mind was planning to kill it. We know how bow hunting is, but
yeah,
I had
the best
laid
plans of mice and men often go awry, right?
You're not wrong. So we had a snowstorm, and my foolish self, I'm thinking, After the baby's born and we visit with family and stuff, we're in the hospital, and I'm like, when are we going to be able to go home? And I was thinking, maybe I can slip out for an evening. And what happened, and as fate would have it, we had a terrible snowstorm, and we were snowed into the hospital for an extra several days. So that took us through the duration of season, and that's fine, because my daughter, was great. But then that was the end of bow season, so it was kind of like, well, heck, not going to happen this year. So that's kind of how it was last year. That's where I first encountered the deer. But he was about 165 inches based on what I saw in the trail cam pictures that a couple of my neighbors had. About 165-inch mainframe 9, couple stickers. And so, yeah, it was a great deer last year.
Very cool, very cool. So obviously he probably didn't leave your mind, so to speak. You were thinking about him and hoping that, he would appear again.
That's
how
right.
soon... How soon in the off season did you start getting pictures of them?
Man, I have a, so this farm where I saw the deer was relatively close to the farm that I hunt the most and do most of my work and commit most of my resources and my effort to. So I just knew, based on what I had seen throughout 10, 12 years of hunting this farm, I just knew that if that deer was anywhere near us in the area, in the bottom there, he'd be on our farm there for a good majority of the season, or at least quite a bit during the rut. So my plan was, hey, got to look at the law of averages or odds or whatever you want to call it, but the place with the most habitat, the most acres, that's where I've got the best chance to kill this deer, because I've got, like I said, food plots, and, I've done hinge cutting and tons of habitat work, and the access is just how I want it. And so, that's where I figured the deer would be. So I was running all my cameras there on this quite a bit larger farm, and I was getting some great deer, enough that I was like, man, these are great. A couple of the deer in the 160 to 170, even pushing 180 inch range. And so I'm fired up, and those, not that this deer, I'd forgotten about him, but last year he's 160 some. I've got several deer on the farm that are that size or bigger. So he was just kind of like, I hope he shows up, but I just don't know. I don't know if he will. And so throughout the beginning part of the season, I was focused on the deer that I was getting, because I just knew that this buck would be there if he was still around. And
sure,
in fact,
sure,
that was not the case.
Now, did you think any of these other deer were him, or did you
no.
know beyond a shadow of a doubt that he just hadn't showed up yet?
That's right. I know that deer racks do some crazy things, that I don't claim to be a biologist, but all of the deer that I had was really, that I had folders for on my computer that I was really keyed in on this property. And it was doing my summer scouting and early season stuff. I knew none of them were him. No, they were, big, big, wide, typical, just, the typical deer you'd think you dream about. big, wide, good frame deer. And so I knew, and you know, 10, 12 point, I knew it wasn't a big nine. I just knew that. So I just kind of thought, you know, hell, stuff happens, you know, whatever, maybe the deer isn't around anymore is kind of what I'd settled on, until I did in fact find him.
So how did you go about finding him?
Well, to find him, I basically settled on the deer that were on my farm there, that, you know, our farm, I basically settled on those being my pick for the year. Now, not that I was getting them all super regularly, but they were summer in there and they were coming through there. And this farm has probably got the best pinch point, that I've ever had the chance to go anywhere near. So I knew that if that deer was anywhere on this farm, and I knew that those deer that were on the farm, great chance are going to come through the pinch point at some point, you know, when I really started keying in on the timber and, you know, early November there. And they did, it was great. But then those deer were kind of moving around and one of them got shot, by a neighbor. And so then I start thinking, well, okay, I don't have the biggest deer real regularly that I'd known about. So I'd kind of be an idiot to not at least go take some of these trail cams that are bouncing around in the passenger seat of my truck and put them up, you know, a little bit further away in some other places that I have permission here close by. You know, I hunt a pretty broad area, but, I thought, well, I ought to get out and just kind of do some recon and make sure I'm not missing something. So that's mm-hmm. when I started getting out and getting into some of those fringe areas that I don't usually focus a ton on. And I put up some cameras there. And, there was one spot where I had seen the deer in the area. It was plausible to me that the deer could be there is why I stopped, you know, not because the place just looks incredible, but it's in a good area next to some pretty good farms. And, I just thought maybe by an off chance I'd have this deer. So I go hang a camera there and I hadn't given it too much thought, didn't have anything on it. And one day I swung through there and grabbed a card on my way to hunt my normal farm. And I was walking in. And, I was actually, as I'm walking into my stand, in the evening, I'm looking at, my trail cam card reader of this card uh-huh. that I just pulled. And I'm walking into the farm and I'm sliding through the pictures, you know, it's does, raccoons, squirrels, whatever. And my heart, I still remember it, is like my heart stopped. I was like, what is that? It was kind of a side angle picture of one side of a deer's rack. And as soon as I saw it, I called my dad. He's my guy. I mean, I'm going to call him. He's my first call on all hunting stuff, deer and turkey hunting related. He's the guy that got me started, and we've got a special relationship. But I called him, and I said, Dad, what are you doing? And whatever it was nearly as important as what I needed him to do. I said, drive to the farm and home store immediately and get me a hang-on stand and 5 sections of climbing sticks and meet me here. And he said, well, how much is it, you know, talking about, I said, I don't care how much it costs, Dad, just get it all and meet me there. So he did. I walked right out of the farm, went into there and hung up this stand where I thought it needed to be, not knowing exactly what I had, but knowing based on the blurry side of the rack, it was bigger than anything else I knew about. So it was kind of just like one of those deals, man, I hope my gut's right. And you start second guessing it, but I knew that it was big. So I thought, I've got to get something hung there immediately. So that's what I did. And then, my next card pull, I saw what kind of confirmed my thoughts. And that's when I thought it's time to get serious here, guys. It was a great picture of this deer and it kind of brought it all to reality.
Now, you had mentioned before, this is like a $40 tree stand, right?
Mm. I think it was about, I think that our farm and home store had it on sale for 20, I think it was 28. And let me tell you, my dad, as good as he is, he's going to make sure that he's got every last cent accounted for. So I think it was 28 bucks and the climbing sticks maybe cost, you know, 60 bucks. So I had less than $100 in the setup, that's for sure.
Did he make you pay him back?
Oh, heaven's sakes, yes. For heaven's sakes, yes. Yeah, he did. Oh, yeah.
It's funny.
Yeah.
So you hung it up. That was when? When did you hang that stand?
I hung that stand in kind of what I would consider prime time, as far as the time of year here in central Missouri or across the Midwest, you know, for a guy that that can set up a farm, Drury Brothers, Lakoski's, a couple of my buddies around here that just have a hunting farm, they can do whatever they want, whenever they want. They have a lot of good luck. You know, prime time for them might be early October when they can get a deer on green, you know. But for me, prime time has always kind of been that October 22nd on. That's when I've had 98% of my encounters with mature deer. And so that's when I really gear up and I try to keep the pressure off my acres. And that's when I start applying it just a little more. So I was actually headed into that farm, my other farm there, thinking that it was, man, I got a good chance to make something happen, you know, soon. And it was late October and, you know, just an afternoon whenever I saw it. And that's kind of when it changed then.
Okay. Now, you could hunt this property, but
that's right.
other people were allowed to hunt it as well, correct?
That's right. It was a good friend of mine, and I was able to hunt it. But, you know, it was kind of one of the deals. Missouri season is, you know, rifle season's a holiday here. So it's like, well, yeah, you can definitely hunt it, but so-and-so hunts it and so-and-so hunts it too sometimes, you know, not much. And my uncle had hunted the farm. So anyways, I was like, all right, when I saw the deer, I thought there's no way I can chance pulling up here and seeing somebody else that hasn't been here in 5 years just happen to hunt it, because I just knew I would absolutely have a meltdown, not mad at anybody, but just crushed. So I called the landowner and I'm like, man, can I please begging him to lease it? He's like, you know, you can hunt it. And I said, no, it's more than I have to get it leased. And so, I leased the farm, and I guess, to be honest with you, I leased the farm, whenever I was thinking to myself, I'm like, man, season's getting closer, whatever. And I started hanging some cameras, and that's when I kind of went around and was hanging cameras. I'm getting the story here. But when I went to hang cameras, I thought, if I do have a good deer or a big deer, I'm going to just lose my mind. That's what it was. So I called him and he was like, how big is the deer? If you're wanting to lease it, it must be good size. And I'm like, man, I just have a hunch. And whenever I got the deer on camera, then I called him, I'm like, well, it's pretty big. So, I just knew though. And when I got it, it was like a breath of fresh air when I saw this deer and I realized that, you know, my uncle and I were the only two people that had access to this particular parcel, and that kind of took a little weight off my shoulders. But man, it was, thank God that it was the size of piece of property it was, you know, affordable and in my area there that I could get on it.
Yeah. How big was the property?
You know, I'm not sure on the total acres of the property, but I'd say huntable acres, you know, that's not just big old expansive field, with road frontage. I would say huntable acres, maybe eight
okay.
or 10.
So yeah, a smaller piece of property.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's kind of woven into a fabric of our landscape, which is crop ground and cattle ground. And then, it's timber in the creek bottoms. And this farm just barely drops into the creek bottoms, maybe 5 acres in the creek bottoms. And then kind of the what comes up into the field. So yeah, I would say, you know, timber, I don't know, 8 acres maybe.
Yeah. Small.
Yeah. Not big. Not one. Yeah. No, not big at all.
So how many days did you hunt this buck?
Oh man. I had to be, touching 30, close to 30, I'd say.
Okay. Okay.
Yep,
so once you got the lease done, I mean, you were all in.
Well, yeah. And so I had the lease done, and that's the thing, you know, which actually makes it crazier whenever I was walking into the farm, because I had it leased. And then whenever I see this deer on my camera, that's when I'm like, I turn and I'm like literally running back to my truck and calling my dad and called a real good friend of mine, who's probably taught me more about hunting than anybody. And I'm like, dude, how big is this deer? And he's like, I can't tell. It looks like a pretty good side, but it's a picture of a picture and it's blurry. And I said, I've got at least, I'm going to go all in here. And that's what, when I got back there, yeah, I was all in. And thankfully, I don't know, thankfully or not, but it's close enough to my other farm that I was actually hunting that evening that I thought to myself, you know, there's still a chance, a good chance that this deer could venture off of the small farm and get up onto my bigger farm, which I felt like once they get there, I feel like I've got a really good chance at him. So I'm still kind of hoping against hope that he comes and kind of makes it easy on me and travels down the creek and gets to where I want him so that I can kind of pattern him on my home turf. But whether that was the case or not, I knew that I had to get some stuff right there where he was at currently.
So did you end up trying to hunt him on the other farm then as well?
Well, you know, pressure, I mean, I don't, you know, it's my opinion, but in my opinion, it is a fact that pressure management is so key. And as I have an addictive personality, I mean, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it, almost to a fault. So, you know, I knew that I was going to, there was no question that I was going to hunt the deer every single day as we were getting into November. And so the only way that I could do that responsibly hunting wise was to pick my spots. And obviously I was going to hunt where I thought the deer was the most of the time, but if it absolutely wasn't right, if I couldn't access it, if work got in the way and I couldn't get under the cover of darkness, or, you know, the wind was wrong or the pressure was wrong for that area, the thermals were wrong, or God forbid the farmers were doing field work or whatever, I felt at least confident enough, you know, to try that other farm, knowing that that deer, knowing the travel corridor that it is, that he could, there's, you know, there's a plausibility the deer could travel through there. So I still had a glimmer of hope, even on the days when I couldn't hunt the farm the deer was living on, that just general rut activity would bring him through my other farm. But the bow was staying on the hanger for anything, bow, gun, whatever, was staying on the hanger for anything other than that deer.
Okay.
You know,
and hunting that other farm, at least you mentally, like, okay, I'm hunting this deer. It helped you mentally knowing, regardless of what farm you're on, that you were, you know, holding out for him. Yeah, that helped that addictive personality.
I knew there was a chance. And, you know, I hate to say it, but, and my wife hates it too, I'm sure, but I'm about as dedicated to waterfowl hunting as what I am deer hunting. So, you know, usually my plan is I like to have them killed the first week of November. Deer hunting is my passion, my first love for sure, my main one. But then I get to duck hunting and whatever, it kind of works out great. I'm lucky to live here in a spot where I can do both. Well, all my buddies are calling me as duck season's, you know, getting fuller and fuller in swing. They're like, man, where are you? You know, your farm's got tons of ducks on it and all this and that. And I'm like, guys, please stop trying to distract me here. And so I'm sitting there listening to people just waylay the ducks when I'm sitting there in my $28 tree stand getting snowed on an all-day sit, you know. But, yeah, it's tough. It's tough. But it at least gave me hope that I knew when it was wrong for that 8 acres and it was, you know, the wrong conditions, I could still hunt somewhere knowing I had a needle in a haystack chance at this deer.
Now, were you getting pictures all along of him to keep the hope alive?
No, and that's what nobody believes or people find it hard to believe was, no, I wasn't getting photos of him at all. And as in a world that's dominated by trail cameras and, you know, when hunting is, they're just so crucial. I use them, but I don't live by them. And this deer is, I'm thankful I don't, because, you know, whenever I was hunting this deer, I had the picture of him. I got the first blurry picture. And then shortly thereafter, I got a couple of really good pictures of him coming through a pinch point and then on a scrape line on the edge of the field, same evening. So I knew he was there again, you know, let's say twice within 3 days, I think it was. So my instinct told me, one, I hadn't heard much about anybody in my area talking about this giant deer. So I hadn't heard much about it. And so I knew, I kind of deduced that this deer was probably staying relatively local. A friend of mine who I trust had told me, man, I saw something huge in this location. So I viewed that as another piece of information because I could trust the person. They didn't know what it was, but it wasn't anything to laugh at. You know, it was something serious. So really that's the fuel that I was going on for about 10 days. And that's when I finally had my first encounter with this deer.
I'm sure after hunting day in and day out and not seeing the buck, not having pictures of the buck on camera, I'm sure you were having, you know, a lot of doubt. How did you deal with that, and what kept you from giving up, and how were you able to just keep pushing forward and, you know, stay on him like you did?
It's dominated my mind at this point, and doubt is definitely moving in. Like I said, you know, I'm not seeing the deer. I don't have any photos. I'm hunting this deer, and it's days, high pressure, sunny mornings, great wind. Just like, if there's a deer anywhere, I should have seen it by now. Like, I'm used to having encounters with the biggest deer that I'm after on those type of days. And it just wasn't coming together. And I thought, this deer is, it has to have moved on. And then I got to thinking, well, what are my options? I can start duck hunting and forget it, which really was never an option. I can keep hunting the deer, and that's about it, because he wasn't on either of the, for two of the three farms that I, he wasn't on any of the farms I could hunt in that area. And I really had nowhere else to go. So, you know, I really kind of thought, well, hell, he's probably really moved on to a different area, or, you know, traveled on, found a new home, whatever. But that's what I was thinking. In the back of my mind, though, I couldn't find a reason that this deer would ever leave, or anything that would make it leave, other than my own intrusion, which I really didn't feel like. I felt like I'd done a pretty good job. So the first time I see this deer is an evening. I have several mature bucks come by, and they're moving through, doing well, does coming through, and deer movement was really good. And I don't know, you know, I don't shoot 190-inch deer all too often, so I don't know how other people feel about it, but for whatever reason, I get this feeling. I'm like, man, I don't know what it was, but it was just like something there. And I look up, and there's this deer about 100 yards in the timber. It's thick. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm just freaking out. I'm like, what do I actually do? You know, I've been thinking about this moment forever, and now I don't even know what to do. It's like my first time hunting. So he's kind of quartering away, and I grunt at him. So all I could think to do, man, he turned, and he just stared me right down. And I'm like, oh man, heck, I'm half scared. This deer's, you know, this hell is scary. The deer's bigger than I am. My heart's pounding, and I'm like, oh my goodness. So I grab my bow. I got the grunt call in one hand. I give him one more, just kind of a little contact grunt, and here he comes. I mean, he's fired up. He's thrashing, tearing stuff up, pawing the ground, just barreling through the woods. So at this point, you know, my heart rate's just off the charts, and dangerously so. And, you know, he gets to about 30 yards, and he's head on. He's in the buck brush. No shot, but he's just staring me down. I'm like, all right. I pull back. I'm like, when he steps the way he's going, continues on his course here, I'm going to kill him right here. And he never did. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, you know, it feels like I've been drawn back for an hour. I can still see him out of the corner of my eye. He's thrashing around on this tree, and some does come through that he was with, you know, another group of does that he was with kind of comes quarters, and he stands there in that thick stuff and stares kind of in the clearing I'm hunting. You know, he doesn't see anything. And when he starts coming through the brush, I left out, deer just start clearing out. Like every buck anywhere near is like, all right, enough of that. So they all scatter. He gets to where he heard me, doesn't see anything, and just turns and goes the other way. And I'm stuck at full draw, heart pounding, and there he goes off into the woods. So that was the first encounter, and it just absolutely about crushed me that it was that close and didn't come together.
And how many more encounters did you have before you?
I didn't have another encounter with that deer for probably around 20 days. I didn't have any photos and no encounters for probably the better part of 20 days.
Wow! So you just kept at it. How many days a week were you hunting?
Seven.
Okay.
I mean, there might have been. I will say, you know, there is. I think there was maybe one day that. I have a media and marketing business. I can set a schedule. I probably, you know, I just kind of set my schedule, but some stuff's unavoidable. I think one day I missed, and like I missed the morning maybe for church, but then I was out there mid morning. And so, yeah, pretty well for like, you know, all practical purposes, every day, not all day though. But you know, when it was smart, I'd sit all day. I did maybe four all day sits for this deer. So yeah, when I left, I'll tell you, when I left that first encounter, I texted my dad when he walked off. I said, man, hung this stand in the wrong tree, Dad, or else I'd be calling you really excited right now. He's like, what happened? And I told him, and he said, oh, man, you got to be kidding me. And when I walked out of the field that night, and this is not a joke, I have no reason to lie about it, I was shooken up so bad, I throw up on my way back out. Just nerves and just this terrible feeling, like, how did this not come together? And I actually physically throw up in the bean stubble field there. And at that point, I kind of started thinking, man, you got to get your priorities straight here, man. I mean, this isn't life or death, but
it truly had buck fever, right? You truly had buck fever.
It was buck fever to the 10th degree.
Wow. That's Something.
It was crazy, man.
So how many more encounters did you have until you killed him?
Exactly zero. Never saw him, never had a picture, nothing.
Okay, so let's break down the day you kill him.
So the day I kill him, so let me tell you, I knew where the deer was bedded. I was 100% sure the encounter that I had, because I saw him basically get up and come out of his bed, which is where I thought he was. So that was super reassuring, even though I hadn't seen this deer. You know, I just kind of trusted what I knew. That was where a deer would be, had everything he needed, cover. It was actually in a hairpin of a creek, so nothing could really get to him. He kind of felt like he was back there doing his thing, and nothing was going to bother him. The does were all with him. He had 15 does with him in the first encounter. So at that point, I started to realize this deer doesn't need to do anything except for walk 100 yards to feed and back. You know, he has, nothing's going to challenge him. The does are all coming to him. And maybe that's typical of a giant deer. I don't know. I haven't killed enough. But then it starts making sense. Like, this deer has no reason to go anywhere. So I at least had a little hope then that I wasn't a complete failure as a hunter. But it still didn't make it any easier sitting there day after day. So the day that I killed the deer, hunted that morning for like an hour was all I was able to hunt. Saw a nice 3.5-year-old deer. So I was like, whoa, great hunt. And I go to work. I'm working throughout the day, and I got a couple calls for jobs, and one guy called me, and he's like, man, I need you to be here this evening to do this this marketing deal. And I thought, okay, I guess I won't get to hunt tonight. Dang it. That's not good, but I've hunted plenty. Maybe a break will be good. Well, he calls me, and he says, hell with it, man. I'm going deer hunting. So, okay, so I've got a couple hours, I think, you know, a few hours. It's, you know, it's 1 o'clock. And so I thought, you know what? Obviously, I'm going to climb into the stand. So, so I did. I climb into the stand. You know, by this time, it's rifle season. So I've
what
set
day is
through.
It?
Yeah, this is November. I guess this would have been November. Maybe I'm trying to think what. I guess November 20th, I think it would have been. So, which is 10 days later than I've ever killed a deer. You know, it's always in that first to mid part of November. And so.
Now, we didn't talk about this. Were you, at this point, were you hunting with a gun or a bow still?
So at this point, I'm hunting with a bow during rifle season. And at this point, though, I'm like, well, you can't take both to the stand. So I'm just hunting with a bow. And then it's like, okay, I've got the perfect wind for this spot. And it was getting painfully obvious that with my schedule and with my what was going on the farm, I needed to either kind of put up or shut up at this point. So as much as it pains me, I take my rifle, which I do not take any, you know, I'm not a rifle hunter, but I don't like it, but I take my rifle because that's just what I was left with. And so, you know, only thing worse than not killing the deer to me was going to be investing a month and all the strain and losing weight and everything else and having this deer at like 70 yards and not been able to kill it. So I take my rifle out, you know, during rifle season, the old can't beat them, join them in Missouri.
Yeah.
So I take it out and you know, it's gun season. And I tell you, all rifle season, I'm sitting there hunting with a bow, whatever. And every time I hear a shot, and I know my neighbors were getting tired of me because every time I hear a shot, I'm texting, did you kill one? How big was it? Did you kill anything? And they'd be like, no, it's a doe. No, we missed. It's nothing to write home about. You know, it's just, I know my neighbors were getting tired of me, and they were all like, man, what are you chasing? Like, why are you so worried about this? Like, you know, we killed a, you know, small 8-point. And I'd be like, oh, good. And it was November 18th, the day I shot the deer. So it was just driving me insane. And I had people like, then it starts, you know, I kind of give myself away at that point. I got people that are like, well, Joe must be chasing something. He's literally gone insane. And people are seeing where my vehicle's parked. I'm taking different vehicles, having my wife drop me off just so that people don't key in on, you know, how much time I'm actually spending on this deer. And so I get the kind of the reprieve from work there. I'm like, perfect, I'm going to go. And I go get in the stand, and it's kind of warm, maybe 40 degrees, you know, not super cold or anything. So I thought, well, it's kind of warm and windy. I had a good wind for the deer, which I've learned is important, not my best wind. I had a southeast wind, really kind of needed it to be more east than south, but I thought, well, this is what I'm, you know, it's crunch time. So I get into the hunt, I climb up at my stand in one of the seven that I have hung within 100 yards. I picked the, you know, it was getting just, I mean, how ridiculous it was getting, it's hard to explain, but I had so many stands hung up, you know, there was more dollars worth of metal up in the tree than the scrapyard, even buying the stands with as cheap as I do. But I get up in one of the stands, and the deer, you know, as evening approaches, the deer kind of start trickling by, and you know, does and bucks and all these deer that I felt like I knew personally after seeing them so many times, like, yep. And they kind of slide out into the field, and there's five or six bucks out in the field and 10 or 12 does and a few in the woods milling around. And and that's whenever I see him for the second time. And I don't know, that moment was just surreal, just seeing him again after all that time.
And so you saw him stand up out of his bed or come walking by?
I see these does. It was weird. There's two bucks behind me, a little 6-point, a little 8-point, back there fighting, just sparring, and they're clanking around, and, you know, whatever, and I kind of look back, and it was fun to watch, but, you know, whatever. So there's they're fighting, and then there's another little group, two you know, couple bucks kind of looking at each other, kind of toying around with fighting and just tickling the antlers together a little bit. So there's all sorts of stuff going on, and then all of a sudden, it just wham, silent, complete silent. Everything stops. Everything looks down into the woods like, oh boy,
here he comes.
And that's when I knew, like, that's when my heart just started pounding. I was like, it has to be. And I look down and I see something moving, and oh my gosh, I throw the binoculars up and it's a doe. And I'm like, what in the world? Well, it was a train of does. It was 16 does. They come filing through. And just in my mind, I thought of it so many times, especially since the first encounter, it was the same huge group of deer with this buck. And sure enough, the last deer, I didn't need my binoculars. I could just see him. Even though it was brushy, I could just see the frame, the big dark rack. And I couldn't believe it. I knew it's a weird deal. I knew it had to be him, but I also couldn't believe it was him. So he's on the same path that he was the first night that I saw him. And, I'm in a different stand, but with stone's throw from the other one. So, I decide to grunt again, even though I don't feel like he's going to come away from 16 does. And, I grunted, he turned, all these other deer scatter, and wouldn't you know it, he comes thundering right down into the thicket the same way that he did the first time.
Okay.
So, yeah, so I'm sitting here he comes, and I still, even with a rifle, don't have a shot. He's in too much stuff, and I'm in a little walnut tree at this point. It was the only place I could get a stand at this spot, so I'm not really hitting very good. I'm silhouetted horribly. I'd been picked off by a few other deer, and he gets too close for comfort, and he gets to an opening where I can shoot, and I shoot him, and I couldn't believe it. I mean, he didn't go very far, but I just couldn't believe it. But
you watched him fall then.
He fell 5 yards from where I shot him, and I shot him at 20. So he was right there.
All the work paid off.
It did. It did. Crazy feeling.
And so what's the gross score?
He grossed just a touch over 197.
Is he a typical or non-typical? He looked kind of typical to me when I was looking
at him. He's got a typical frame. I guess he'd technically be non-typical. He had 20 scorable points. You know, he's got a drop tine and a couple, more than a couple kickers. Main frame 9 with a drop tine and, you know, another 10 kickers.
You know, one thing we didn't discuss yet, which is usually one of the first questions I ask, is did you give him a nickname?
I didn't. And I don't usually because, like I said, I get these deer and I'm predominantly hunting pinches and travel corridors because I don't, you know, always have a spot that I can carve out the perfect food plot. So I try to go where they're going to be moving through, maybe instead of where they're going to. And, so I see all sorts of different deer and I always have, and it's always been a surprise. You know, there's been a lot of surprise bucks and stuff and I just never got into naming them. It was just, and really I didn't want to name it because I didn't want to screw up and say the name or tip myself off to anybody else on this deer. I didn't tell hardly anybody. So, no, I didn't give him a nickname and really didn't ever talk about it.
So let's break this down quick before I let you go. You had a total of how many pictures of him?
Three
total pictures in 2 years.
I had 4 pictures. Yep.
Okay. And the first year you saw him, he was, you know, 160 class buck. So he grew almost 40 inches.
That's right.
Total of 4 pictures. and 2 encounters.
That's right.
You know, most people just would have probably thrown in the towel and said, "You won, big fella."
Yes, there were several times when I thought that sure sounded like a lot more fun way to do it. But yeah, it's crazy when you think about it that way. Yeah, it was very few encounters and very few pictures.
So just hats off to you for being, so persistent. You know, hard work paid off again.
I appreciate it. The old saying is true. It definitely does. I really do appreciate it. It's about all you can say.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, thank you for being on the podcast today, and good luck next season.
Tracy, thank you. I'll have something to shoot for next year, and hopefully we're having this conversation again.
Sounds good.
Have a good one, man.
Yeah,
thank you.
Care. Bye-bye. Bye. You know, what I like most about interviewing Joe is just the level of excitement and the level of drive. I mean, you can just hear it in his voice, from puking along the trail because he was so excited to the moment he wrapped his hands around the antler. It was just an amazing story. It was great talking to him and just hearing the excitement in his voice. So thank you very much, Joe, for being on the show. Until next week, to learn more about me, visit my website, tracybreen.com, TracyBreen.com. I typically use that website for booking wild game dinners, or if you're in the need of a wild game dinner speaker, check out my website. Until the next episode, have a great day, and God bless.